You are now listening to the Big Beyond Belief podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey, everybody. This is Leo Costa Jr. coming at you from BigBeyondBelief.com. I'm doing a show today with someone who I'm really excited about doing this show with. His name is Carl Lenore. He has a radio show called Superhuman Growth. Is that right?
Superhuman Radio.
Superhuman Radio. Forget the
Superhuman
growth.
Radio. Superhumanradio.net is the website.
Nice. And anyway, Carl, listen, I'm really excited about doing this show with you because I think that you're one of the straight shooters in the industry. And Lord only knows that we need some straight shooting people out there because there's a bunch of crap that's going on. Yeah. So I'm glad to have you. Carl, here's, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, there's a lot of people in the industry that have what I call SOS syndrome. It's a shiny object syndrome. A lot of trends going on. So tell me, I'd like for you to tell our audience exactly, tell me about Superhuman Radio in a nutshell and where you're at today.
So November of 2005, I launched a show because I was a morbidly obese, very, very sick person prior to that. When I turned 40 years old, I was very sick. I had to sell my business. I had an alarm company. I had developed a heart problem. They were going to put a pacemaker in me. And I wasn't going to have none of that. I came from healthy stock, from good stock. Parents were healthy into their late 80s and when they finally passed away. And I thought, this is nonsense. I made myself fat. I made myself sick. I'm going to make myself healthy. And I found physical culture, quite frankly. I found some of the theories of Bernard McFadden and Eugene Sandow and Jack LaLanne and Armin Tanney and all these guys that understood the correlation between physical fitness and health and strength and health and longevity. And I thought, I can fix all of my problems if I learn to train hard, eat right, and sleep right. And that's where my journey began. And I lost 100 pounds. I was 330 pounds. I lost 100 pounds. I was at a Christmas party one day. And I told the story about how I said I lost 100 pounds. And I was like the lady at the park feeding the pigeons. All these people are around me. They're like, how did you lose 100 pounds? And they all expected me to say, oh, I took a pill, you know, or I did. I said, well, I changed my life. I started doing this and that and this and that. They became less interested. They were like, oh, you got to do all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's what you have to do if you really want to do it from the inside out.
Right.
But this one guy came out and he said, have you ever thought about doing radio? And this is back in the days when we had tape recorded phone machines. Leo, you remember the Coda phone? I said, I don't even like to hear my own voice on my answering machine.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do radio? He goes, just go see this guy in Clear Channel. I says, what do I tell him? Just tell him how you lost 100 pounds. He says, because your passion comes through. And that was 14 years ago, the third week of November. They gave me a slot on a Saturday afternoon show on a station called WKJK 1080 AM here in Louisville, Kentucky. The show exploded. I got syndicated, but then I didn't want to be in the syndication game because there were some problems. And so I went straight internet radio, put up an internet stream, turned it into a podcast, and I've never looked back.
Nice. Carl, when you say you lost 100 pounds, of course, I'm coming from the, you know, the personal training and all that industry. But when you actually started doing that, were you at that point versed on training, or were you more versed? Where did you start? The nutrition aspect of it, or how did you start that?
I actually had a really good mindset in the beginning, which most people don't. My goal wasn't to lose weight. It was to lose fat. I come from, working class people, you know, bricklayers, truck drivers. So strength was always important to me and meaningful to me. So I focused on more powerlifting type work. And that's how I found Big Beyond Belief in those books back then, because I was more focused on getting stronger and taking my time. I made my week-to-week goal strength, not losing weight.
Okay.
Because I understood that losing weight is not necessarily a good thing. People with cancer lose weight. They don't want to lose weight. I wanted to lose fat, but I wanted to either maintain or accrue more muscle. So early on, because I read books by Bernard McFadden and by Jack LaLanne and by these guys, and then I got Randy Roach's first book, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, I understood that weight loss is a very, very dangerous thing if you don't understand that you want to lose body fat, you want to gain and maintain muscle mass and strength. And so it was a very easy process for me because I kept getting stronger, and that made me happy. I didn't lose sight of the goal because my goals were week to week to add reps, to add pounds. And my body just transformed on its own as a byproduct of that.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, of course, I deal with this every day with clients that come to me because I'm in the business of getting, you know, making people a better version of themselves. And what I learned, a lot of stuff, most of the things I learned was from bodybuilding, because as you know, because you're kind of tapping into that, is that in order for you to be able to produce results and then reproduce that result, at some point you have to get down to the sort of the nth degree of that, because you'll especially being 100 pounds overweight, if that's what you were, when you start doing just about anything, you're going to get a result from that. Now, if you're, you know that if you're 50 pounds lighter and the closer that you get to it being leaner, that gets a little more difficult to do, which means that you really have to start understanding how you did that. You know, so as you're going, so you're losing, you're getting stronger, and that was your focus, which is good. But then did you get to a point where it was like you hit a plateau? Because that's one of the...
I've never hit a plateau, and here's why. Because I started this show, my podcast now, Superhuman Radio, from very, very selfish beginnings. It allowed me to interview people like you. Leo, you're a great guy, and you've helped literally hundreds of thousands of people all over the world, directly and indirectly. But you and I would have never had the conversations we had if I didn't have a radio show and say, hey, come and be a guest. So the reality is my show gave me very selfish opportunities to interview Mauro Di Pasquale and you and many, many, many. I mean, you know, I've been doing five shows now for a week for going on 14 years now. So I just did a show for somebody else and they were like, oh, do you have a medical degree? No, where did you learn all this? I says, I've been doing this show for 14 years. It's like I've been in the university for 14 years. Yeah. I get to interview the most brilliant, most talented people in this space. And I'm just a parrot. I just repeat what they tell me that works. So the reality is I never hit a plateau because I bought Big Beyond Belief. I interviewed you. I started flirting with overtraining and learning how to back off the gas and put on the gas. So I was lucky. I never ran into none of those problems that these other guys run into because I the show gave me access to brilliant people who really helped me avoid any of the pitfalls.
Yeah, that's interesting, you know, and here's the thing. Here's one of the things I've learned. It's really hard to communicate this to people because of, you know, as a human being, we get bored with stuff pretty easily at times. And, you know, the thing about hitting a plateau is actually a necessary evil because that's where all the real results is made. There's a window in there. It's like 3 to 6 weeks is a sweet spot. You know, it's looking at this from a different perspective. And so it's not really something that you need to avoid. In fact, once you understand how the physiology works, you actually look forward to when you actually enter that plateau, and then you stay right there because your brain is the one that is adapts much quicker than the physiology, the muscle. And yet we're changing too often. This is happening with CrossFitters all the time. They change too often, and the body actually needs a certain amount of repetition to adapt to whatever environment you're providing. In this case, you were doing strength training. Well, hell, if you're changing up too often, that's not good either. So you need a certain amount of repetition.
Program jumpers are the ones that always say to me, you know, I've been training for 2 years and I don't make progress. Well, what are you doing? Well, I was doing convict conditioning, and then I started doing CrossFit. Yeah. Then I started doing this. Then I started doing that. And it's, I say, why did you change every time? Did you stop making progress? No, not really. But I just thought, you know, muscle confusion.
Yeah.
You can do muscle confusion doing the same movements, but changing the weight and the rep scheme. You don't have to change the whole program.
Yeah. At that point, you're confusing the body so much that you're stalling your results.
Imagine, and I love to use this analogy when I talk about this. Imagine you go into college. You start out, they say, what do you want? Oh, my major is going to be business. Business management. So you do 2 or 3 semesters of business management. Then you go, you know, I think I'm going to go into marketing. You do 2 or 3 semesters of marketing. They say, well, you know, I think I'm going to do accounting. You could do 2 or 3, but you could spend 4 years in college and not know anything because right. You keep jumping. You got to build on the foundation. And that's where the magic happens. Consistency, patience, That's where the magic happens. Doing the same things over and over again. And to your point, I used to get excited if I thought I was about to hit a plateau. Man, I don't know. I'm not getting strong enough. All of a sudden, my strength isn't, it's not changing. And I used to think, you know what? Progress is not a line. It's not a straight line. It's a series of zigzags. I used to get excited because I think, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to change my rep scheme for a while. I would do that. And then all of a sudden, boom, I'd be back on track.
Yeah. And it's very, that's very intuitive. And that's in the training courses that we developed here. You know, one of the things that we talked about was hyperacceleration, hyperadaptation. And that's exactly what you did. That was very intuitive. But if you do that too soon or not soon enough, you know, that's where you start learning your craft. And just like you said, you've been around this thing for so long that, you know, like Albert Einstein said, real knowledge is through the experience of all this, you know, and you've certainly got 14 years under your belt and you learn stuff like that. And that's, you know, for me in the industry right now, and this is part of the reason why I'm coming back into it again, because, you know, Carl, I'm just like you, I'm out on a mission to straighten things out. I see stuff that's just not right out there, and I just think that some of this is just, you know, social media, and but it's not all that. It's not just social media. It's just that you've got people out there that really don't have the experience, and especially to be able or telling other people what to do. You know, they just don't have enough of that. You know, so let me get back to your. It sounds like you started training and you figured out that when you were getting into a plateau, that you made some changes, but. Okay, when it came to, there's three components in order to manipulate the body in the most efficient way. That's weight training, cardio, and then nutrition. Did you ever start incorporating anything else into your strength training? Or you know what I mean?
Well, nutrition, I adhered to a multi-meal protocol because I believe in the fed state phenomenon. When the body has an abundance of food, small meals multiple times a day, it actually becomes less resistant to letting go of body fat. Everything I do, I look at through evolutionary eyes. Why would our body do this? What would it have served us in evolutionary time? Because the reality is, the past 40,000 years, we've had access to food with greater degree. Prior to that, we were hunter-gatherers. So whenever I look at phenomenons, I think, you know, why would this work this way? What would it have served us? How would it have served us back then, because we spent more time as hunter-gatherers than we have as agrarian, you know, keepers of the soil and animal husbandry that we have now. So I've always adhered to the concept of multiple meals throughout the day, small meals, keep insulin flattened out, and also signal the body that we live in an environment of abundance. There's nothing to worry about. You can let go of body fat, number one. The other thing is that I've always done cardio, and I still do. And it's like when people say, should I do cardio? That's like saying, should I breathe or shouldn't I breathe? Of course you should breathe. Of course you should do cardio. We evolved to be bipeds. That's if you read this, the book, The Story of the Human Body by Dr. Daniel Lieberman from Harvard, he's been on my show a couple of times. One of the things that gave us an evolutionary boost is that we started standing up and walking. It gave us a bigger profile. We scared more animals, but we were able to go further. We were able to go further on the same amount of energy than we were. Of course you should walk. We evolved to walk. If you're not walking, you're making a huge mistake. Your lower back's going to give you problems, and your spine's going to give you problems. Your heart is going to give you problems. Your brain is going to give you problems. We were designed to walk. And so when I hear bodybuilders go, oh, if I do cardio, I'm going to lose muscle. Oh, my God. Forget about it. You're splitting hairs now. You're not going to lose muscle. You're going to gain muscular endurance. You're going to be able to train harder and train longer. It's silly, of course. So I've always done cardio. I get up first thing in the morning and I walk. That's what I do. Walking is the best thing for your lower spine. A lot of people have lower back problems. Two things can heal your lower back: planking and walking. That's it. You plank every morning for as long as you can, and you walk starting out 20 or 30 minutes a morning, and you do that, and your lower back won't bother you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And, you know, coming from a bodybuilder's sort of position, one of the things that – here's what I learned, Carl. And again, I like what you're saying, all that stuff. But one of the things that I learned – because, you know, as a bodybuilder, we work so hard in the off season to put on muscle mass. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that I made so many mistakes, especially early on. And some of my mistake was the fact that I was doing too much cardio. But let me tell you the state at that point that I was in. It was in pretty much chronic being overtrained because, yeah, you know, when you're doing pre-contesting, it's a different animal than when you're in off season, you know? So we really did have to be mindful, and it's not the same for everybody, but here's what I learned. There was one show that I did that I thought, well, I took the mentality that if this is good, then more must be better. I just used that rationale. And I learned that at least in one case, that wasn't the what actually happened. I did one for one show. I was doing 3 to 4 hours of cardio a day, you know, thinking, oh, well, more must be better. And let me tell you something. I came into that show kind of skinny fat. I lost, I did waste muscle, but, you know, I think that.
But notice what you said, skinny fat. You did lose muscle, but you didn't lose as much fat as you should have. And I'm going to speak to that. Now.
Right. That's exactly right. So right. And this is when, you know, I thought, okay, I need to bring some more help in because I'm to the point at that stage of the game, I needed somebody else. And that's when I ran into and got introduced to Tom Platz, you know, and he taught me from another side of it. It's like learning these different sides, you know, the same coin. And of course, Tom basically said, look, you know, cut your cardio down to about 25 to 30 minutes, and that'll minimize that muscle wasting. So, you know, that's why I was asking
and,
you.
And cut your calories.
And cut your calories.
If you want to be in a caloric deficit, there's two ways to do it. Eat less or move more.
Yeah.
But here's the problem with the moving more. Again, we go back to evolution. The body senses stress. The reason that multiple meals work is because it reduces stress on the body to panic that there may not be food in the future. And so when you have multiple meals a day, the body goes, we live in a world of abundance. We don't have to store body fat. Okay. Now you're going to start dieting for competition. What do? The first thing you do is you start upping your cardio. And now you start getting into the world of overtraining. The body perceives overtraining as this person is a bad hunter. They're working three times as hard and we're getting less calories. We have to protect ourselves because there may be famine coming. This is exactly what the body does.
Yeah.
Talk to any anthropologist. So what does the body think? Well, if you're in a balloon, a hot air balloon, and it's not going far enough off the ground, what is the first thing you do? You get rid of dead weight. Well, the body perceives muscle as dead weight. It's burning calories. It's a luxury. We don't need it. So the first thing the body says is, okay, we have to reduce our basal metabolic rate. First thing we do is we get rid of muscle. Second thing we do, we turn down the thyroid. Now you're exhausted all the time. You got to use Clen and all this other stuff just to get to the gym and train. And you're forcing the body to work. Well, the body goes, okay, this idiot doesn't get it. This idiot is going to kill us. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to stop building any muscle. We're going to rip muscle off of his carcass. And we're going to store body fat because we have a famine coming.
Yeah.
This guy is working three times harder than he was 2 weeks ago, and we're getting less calories. This has been shown in science. It's been shown in women and in men that when women and men undergo high degrees of stress, metabolic rate slows down, body fat hormones that break down fat slow down. The machinery that makes body fat ramps up, and all of a sudden you find yourself losing muscle but not losing body fat. And what's the answer? I'll just do 3 hours of cardio. No.
Yeah.
What you need to do is back the F off.
Yeah.
Back off. The body, your body is going, you're going to kill us. We have to save you from yourself.
Yeah. That's your the old fight or flight nervous system kicking in when it perceives the threat like that, you know? But the thing that I, you know, looking back now, is I'm actually glad that I did that. Because I had to see it for myself. You know, do you remember it? Did you ever meet or know Don Ross, the Ripper Ross? You remember him?
I do remember him. I think he was on my show once.
He was a wrestler, a former wrestler.
Yeah. No, he was a big, strong guy.
Yeah.
I remember he was on my show once.
Okay.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Yes. And so I met Don at Gold's Gym down there. I'm still a member down there, but I met Don back then during the days of when I was writing these bodybuilding courses. And one of the things that Don said to me that stuck with me, he said, Leo, everything, all training, all the stuff that you're doing works. It's just to the degree that it works. And basically he was just telling me, you're your best advocate. You're your best person to determine whether or not it works for you.
Right.
You know, and then that kind of also fit in the same lines as when I went to Bulgaria. I did two trips over there. They always thought outside the box. They thought, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to learn from a firsthand instead of having theory tell us what they think should be done. So it was another way for Don to say, look, just think outside the box, give it a try, and then you determine what works best for you. I think that was really smart, you know, but I had to learn that lesson by losing, you know, I actually came into that show in the worst shape of my life because of that, you know. And of course, the following year, I worked with Tom, and then he straightened all that out. It was dramatic differences, you know. So that's interesting. I like your take on that. How about, like, with your nutrition, was there anything? You know, there's so many, you know, I tell people, you know, there's three components that you need to manipulate. I think the hardest one personally is the training component as far as teaching somebody. It's more hands-on. But I think the one that's most confusing is the nutrition. There's so many damn, people that talk about these different ways of eating that it's to the point where they're all confused. So when you were doing your nutrition, was there any plan that you followed? How did you get to where you're eating, for example, like today?
I shot for, and I still do, 1.5 to 2 grams of protein per pound of body weight. I've always done that. I get my protein first. I even eat my protein first because my protein is the most important portion of the meal. If I'm going to get full and not eat something, it's not going to be the protein. I also stick to very, very boring foods as a rule. Now, you know, my life is an 80-20. 80% of the time I live this way. 20% of the time I go out and eat tacos and drink tequila. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I have to have a life too at the same time, or I'll be an island.
Yeah.
But I eat boring foods. You know, I eat chicken, I eat turkey, I eat red meat, I eat fish. So I eat a variety. I use my protein powder. I make my own. But I stick with broccoli. I love broccoli. I like green beans. As far as vegetables go, I eat lots of salad greens. I eat really boring foods, but I eat a lot of them.
Yeah,
and I have a theory about this, that when you eat the same foods over and over again, the body becomes much more efficient at breaking them down and assimilating them, because the pancreas and the gut, the microbes in the gut, they become better. They know what to expect. A lot of people who eat like I do, we eat the same boring foods. Then you go out one night and somebody says, oh, we're going to have, you know, fettuccine Alfredo, and you have it and you feel bloated and you feel horrible. And you think, oh, why is this affecting me? Well, chances are because you are so strict about your diet that your body gets used to digesting these foods and the other foods it doesn't like anymore. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
So I'm a huge proponent of eating the same foods. Once again, predictability, routine, the body perceives that as low stress. The same foods every day, the body perceives that as low stress. If you keep changing foods, it's like, oh, the body can start to perceive that as unpredictability.
Yeah.
And there's magic in this. And a lot of people think I'm crazy. Pick up the book, The Story of the Human Body by Dr. David, I'm sorry. I just said his name. Anyway, so pick up the book, The Story of the Human Body, and read it and understand our evolutionary beginnings, to understand why we react to the things we react to in this day and age, right? Food, sleep, another big one is sleep, and exercise. But yeah, I'm a very simple eater. I don't need fancy foods. I don't need fancy dressings. I get by with a chicken breast and broccoli, I'm happy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that what you're explaining, because when
Daniel Lieberman. I'm sorry.
Okay, Lieberman. It's funny how you're explaining how you eat, because what you're talking about is what the Bulgarians, they did the very same thing, Carl, when they did their training. They said, look, the body becomes its function. Okay, it's Wolf's Law. You know, you teach it what you want it to do. And that was at their whole point was they did 50 to 65 one rep maxes every single day, because it was very specific to the sport that they were in. You know, so the same thing applies. You're exactly right in the way that you eat and how your body's going to function, because it's just like those, the CrossFitters or the people that are changing their programs all the time. It causes high stress to the body. The body doesn't like that, you know.
Right.
And yet, right. and yet, in Bulgaria, I thought this was really fascinating. The, you know, we take, we have no clue how lucky we are in this country, because in Bulgaria at the time, this was in the late 80s when I went over there, you know, they didn't have a like an ongoing source of protein, Carl. They had, there were times where there wasn't that much or hardly any protein on the shelf back then in those days. So what the Bulgarians did is they actually made, took advantage of that, and they figured out that you could go for periods of time where you starve the body from the protein.
Protein fasting, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you bring it back in, because the body recognizes that, look, I might not get this again, it actually hoarded the protein, and it made them even more efficient.
So there's two phenomena that you're referring to that have now been exposed and proven in science, and that is the phenomenon of abundance and scarcity. And we see this in every area. I'm going to just hit a couple that are not that are not even tangential, but you'll understand. So idiopathic short stature in children. They give them growth hormone. They did a study back in 1978, 1979, where they gave two groups of children idiopathic short stature. Each group got 35 IUs a week of growth hormone. One got the exact same dose every single day. The other one, they split the doses into 3 days. Big bolus on Monday, Thursday, Saturday. That's it. Same exact IUs, but the children who got the unpredictable dosing had a 50% greater growth from their growth hormone therapy, number one. So this is to speak to your theory of scarcity and abundance, which I'm a huge believer in.
Yeah.
More recently, everybody loves fish oil. Well, here's an interesting fact. If you take the same dose of fish oil every day, the valuable DHA will start to be used as an energy substrate instead of stored in fat cells to help suppress inflammation. Because the body figures, oh, we're getting this every day.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be more tomorrow. Let's just burn it up. We'll use it for energy. But if you take the same amount of milligrams of fish oil, same thing, but you give it to people in one dose a week, more DHA, greater drop in total body inflammation.
Interesting, huh?
Okay. And so when we look at this phenomenon, we understand that the body likes predictability, and it changes the way the body handles things. To come back full circle to multiple meals a day, the body goes, oh, we're going to get a lot of food. We don't need to make fat. Yeah. We're not going to starve. We get five meals a day. This guy is, he's an amazing hunter. Okay. Yeah. So that speaks to that phenomenon. The other thing that we now understand that science has exposed is that high leucine protein turns mTOR on. Turning mTOR on continuously actually diminishes the protein synthetic response of a protein meal. Basal autophagy. So you have two forms of autophagy in your body. Basal autophagy is going on all the time. It's like you picking up after yourself in the house. You take your clothes up, you put them in the hamper. You don't just drop them on the floor. And then at night, the body goes into peak autophagy, where it's not hosting food, so it cleans everything. It repairs the kitchen cabinets. It does everything. Well, we now know that people who have, where they don't eat protein for periods of time, they have a greater both basal and peak autophagy response and a greater protein synthetic response to the meal that then follows. So that's why I incorporated about 6 years ago a fasting protocol where I stop eating at 6 p.m. at night and don't eat again until after I train, because I'm going to have a greater protein synthetic response to that meal. I train very early in the morning, and then I eat five meals throughout the day. My last meal is at 6 p.m. So the Bulgarians instinctively understood that when you starve the body of protein for even short periods of time and then give it protein, it does better what you want the protein to do in the first place.
I like it. Let me ask you something, because I don't know what this, explain to me what mTOR, is that what you said? What is that?
Yeah, mTOR is the mammalian target of rapamycin. So rapamycin is a protein in the body, and it is responsible for turning on all the machinery that builds. It's the anabolic, it's the anabolic response in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have if you have mTOR turned on all the time, it's not a good thing. You can actually age faster. So you have to have mTOR turned on and then let it kind of settle down. Then you turn it back on again. And this is why the Don Lehman's group up at the University of Illinois, which Lane Norton used to be with, they actually showed that protein pulsing gave you a better overall muscle building effect than just eating continuously throughout the day and keeping mTOR turned on all the time.
Yeah. Now, the other word that you used is, was it autophagy? What did you?
Autophagy. So autophagy. Autophagy is the process in which the human body takes care of metabolic debris and metabolic waste. It breaks down misfolded proteins, organelles go out and remove dysfunctioning mitochondria, which is actually called mitophagy. But this is the body cleaning house. Autophagy is when the body is repairing and getting rid of debris.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Let me share something with you because, you know, I'm that person that is always, and again, the book, you know, that trip that I took in the late 80s, so much of what I learned in Bulgaria is so relative to me today, you know, and one of the things that stuck in my mind was they said, look, we don't want to be hamstrung by theory. And that's the reason why we go into the gym. And the idea is we ask our question, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? In their case, it was to develop the strongest man in the world. And then they said, okay, so here's how we think that the tools in their gym, obviously, were the weights. And they said, we try things first, and then we tell theory. And then once we know that they work, then we bring theory in and we say, look, we know they work. Tell us why. Instead of doing theory first, they did application. So that's always stuck in my head. And I have to tell you something. I want to share something with you now. And it kind of goes, it's contradictory to what you're saying a little bit. But I can tell you, for me, it's worked. Now, it has to do with eating more times a day versus eating less times a day. Here's what I learned from the physiology, and I even wrote a blog about it. I said that you're actually more efficient if you eat less times a day, because what happens with the physiology, it starts releasing via pancreas and liver, it starts releasing enzymes into the bloodstream. And when that happens, your body also produces bile. When those two things occur, then they go to the, if you're carrying body fat, it actually goes to the triglyceride, breaks the triglyceride back down into a free fatty acid to use for energy. And so I actually started eating fewer times instead of eating six or seven times a day, because listen, as a bodybuilder, it was like, that was just like rule number one. You eat six, seven meals a day for the reasons that you're talking about. And it worked for me, but I was curious to see how eating less times a day would affect me. And I have to tell you, between that and what I do now, Carl, that I never did before, and I'm not bodybuilding, I will admit that, you know, I'm more fit into fitness now. I do an intermittent fast every single day. My last meal is at 6 o'clock in the evening when I eat. I don't eat again until I go back home. I take fluids in, but I don't eat again till I eat one meal a day, basically.
So you fast 24 hours a day, basically.
Well, basically, by the time I would say that I start eating, about 18 to 24 hours, I start taking in food. And I have to tell you something. And again, it goes against some of the popular belief, but I can just tell you how I feel. I feel really, and mind you, I don't like to do the same thing every day. My weekends is whatever the hell I want to eat. It's nothing that's off the table, because I did that when I was training, and this is where Mauro Di Pasquale came in, and he took the anabolic, or he took like the Atkins diet, or like even the Vince Gironda. His style was just to eat, you know, low carbohydrates or no carbohydrates 7 days a week, where Mauro came in and said, look, the body doesn't switch metabolisms for 3 days. So you can do this, you know, 5 days during the week, high fat on the weekend. Right. You can just, it was just at that point, just knowing how many calories you need to take in to change your body. But I have to tell you, I eat that way every day now. I have for the last 4 or 5 years. I feel better during the week than I do during the weekend because of that thing that we're talking about. All of a sudden, I got this glutton of food coming in. You know, I eat about 2,500 calories during the week on average. And during the weekend, I eat, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 calories a day. So I really hit it because that's how I like doing it. I don't like to count calories on the weekend. I like to have whatever the hell I want. That makes me feel kind of human. But right. I feel way better during the week when I actually starve myself a little bit.
And that works for you. And yeah, you and I aren't too far off. I'm only eating five meals.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the reality is, and I have about a 16-hour fast, between a 15 and 16-hour fast every single day.
Yeah.
Because I don't have my first meal until around 10:30 when come into the studio after I train.
Yeah.
But I mean, you and I are doing very similar things. So within the anti-aging community, this is called time-restricted feeding. This has been shown to actually extend life. And you and I are around the same age. I'm 61. And right now, you know, my squat is good. I'm just getting my legs back. I had a surgery. But, I mean, you know, I'm still very strong in the gym, but that's not the most important thing to me anymore.
Yeah.
The most important thing to me now is finishing the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think you and I may have talked, but, you know, 7.5 years ago, I had these strokes. I had 3 strokes in 3 weeks and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, one of the things that I really understood even more, I mean, as a bodybuilder, I knew, you know, what I thought all about nutrition. But, you know, something, Carl, when I went to the doctor, it's so funny because I never had a hernia from all the years I trained. I trained, you know, a lot heavy and all that. I never got a hernia. I got a hernia from trying to rehab my paralyzed right side of my body. Bullshit, right. You know, all of a sudden I had this hernia. But the doctor said because I have these strokes and to, you know, it could be a danger when you're going under anesthesia because if you have a small hole in your heart, then the anesthesia slips through and it could cause another stroke or all kinds of trouble. But when I went to that, they told me that I was 30% blocked. I mean, I'm 57 years old at that time. Hell, I thought that was bad. And they said, no, we don't start actually addressing that till about 70%. But I thought that was horrendous, you know? So I guess my point here is I really focused then for a whole year on diet. And this is where I changed my diet a little bit and doing the things that I did. And Carl, this is how powerful diet and nutrition can be. I went back a year later and the doctors were absolutely flabbergasted that I was able to reduce another 15 to 18% of that 30% blockage. That just goes to show you, if you understand how to use macros, they can be, that can be, you know, some of your best weapon right there. You know,
I agree.
And
I agree 100%.
And then you combine that with learning how to train. And it's not that you have to go out and be a gym rat. That's for sure. I mean, I'm 3 or 4 hours, I'm in the gym probably an hour a day is all. But it's not how much you're doing, but what you do, the quality of what you're doing, you know?
So, I agree.
And so, you know, one of the things I learned is that last time I talked to you, and I'd like you to sort of elaborate on this. You said something about eating too soon before you go to bed at night. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. And it's another reason why I have my last meal at 6 is because I go to bed at 9. Dr. Dale Bredesen, who is now curing Alzheimer's, but he can't say that. He can say he makes the symptoms go away because the medical orthodoxy is going crazy. And he wrote a New York Times bestseller calling The End of Alzheimer's from UCLA. He was first on my show in 2013 or 2014. He had done 20 patients at that time. Now he's done over 200 and he's used other clinics now. They're doing it too. And basically what he does with people is what we do. Put them on HRT, gets them some special supplements that are really good for them, cleans up their diet, gets a lot of the grains and the pro-inflammatory stuff out, gets them to start training, gets them to start walking, gets them to start sleeping better. Well, part of the sleeping better protocol is not eating 3 hours before you go to bed because that's when autophagy turns on at night. When you're asleep is when the body wants to repair and it wants to remove metabolic debris. And it's got a bunch of jobs that it's doing while you're laying there sawing logs. But it can't do that if it's digesting food. You know, if the factory is open and the workers are in there, you can't turn the lights off.
Right.
You can't really, so your body really doesn't rest at night if you're going to bed within 3 hours of ending your last meal. And some people make this one change. They go, oh, I'm going to give this a try. So people go, I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to try not eating 3 hours before I go to sleep. And all of a sudden they notice they get a better night's sleep. And we know that poor sleep contributes to dementia. So it's also part of that fasting mechanism that you and I just talked about. I want to have that 14 to 16 hour fast. So in order for me to do that, I stop eating at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
But it's so important, not just for your brain, which it's important for, but physical health in general. The body needs time to repair itself, and it can't repair itself if it's digesting food.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I tell you what, I've done it with myself over the weekend, because if I eat too late, if I eat heavy on both days, especially on a Sunday, man, my Mondays are brutal. I'm wiped out. You know, it's like, what the hell? And that's the reason is because of what you're talking about. So, you know, one of the things I'm doing now is, you know, back in the days when I was doing the bodybuilding, part of the reason that I was carb loading and eating so much up on the weekend was because I was causing temporary stress to the body, so the body would secrete growth hormone. That was part of the reason I was doing that, you know, and that sort of just followed me even to this day. But I do notice that, God, when I do that on Sunday, if I don't start tailoring and tapering off on Sunday, my Mondays are just horrible. It's just, yeah, it's a nightmare, and that's what's going on. So I just, yeah, what I'm doing now is I eat really heavy on Saturday. I give myself that, I let myself go on that. And then what I start doing on Sunday is just slowly start tapering down. And not only tapering down, but also eating, like you're saying, I eat now at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm noticing that when I eat earlier like that, it's a way different response to the next day. So absolutely, that makes total sense, you know? So where do you go from here now? I mean, kind of what's your, with me, my mission now is, I've kind of come full circle, I think. And, you know, I started as a bodybuilder / student of the game, learning all about training and all that kind of stuff. And of course I got into the industry where I'm teaching people and training them, even to the point where I put people in their own business. But now I'm back to, I'm almost back to the top of that where I started again. And I, for me, it's about, you know, going in and now being a teacher, now just going out there and trying to set the record straight. What's going on with you now as far as where you go forward?
I am a perpetual student, and that's really what I am. I'm not an expert at anything. I do this show because it allows me to continue to learn. I love to learn, and I am a perpetual student. And I'll do this show for as long as I can. I love this. When the music starts playing and I know I'm going to get to talk to a guest and do an interview that's going to impact lives, that's very rewarding to me.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy just doing what I'm doing right now, and I hope I can do it for a long time.
I think you'll be able to. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that I'm really thankful about, is that now I can use my knowledge and stuff that I've learned over the years. Because I ask myself, you know, I've had a couple moments throughout my life, I'm thinking, okay, how am I to stay relative now? How can I contribute or give back now? And I think it's just from all the stuff that I've learned, good and bad, and to try to communicate that to the industry. And I feel this is the reason why I'm doing this podcast now. You know, I started doing YouTube. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just learning as I go. You know, I'm just trying to talk to be authentic and, you know, just to kind of speak to what I think is right and wrong in the industry and give my opinion. So I'm kind of back to full circle, and I'm really interested in looking for people like you. I interviewed, I don't know if you know the guy named Jerry Ward. Have you heard of Jerry?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
he's
got a big presence in the YouTube industry, and the common denominator between you and him, and I think me, is that we're straight talking people, and we're not always popular, but that's besides the point. You know, we're going to talk to you straight, whether you like it or not. And so that's one of the reasons, just so you know, that I wanted to have you on my show. I've really enjoyed doing yours. I mean, I've always remembered doing your shows because you know a lot of stuff, you know, and you bring stuff to the table that we can all learn. And the minute we stop being open to learning, we're dead in the water, you know. I've learned that, and I'm always thankful to have to run across people like you, just so you know that.
Thank you.
So thank you. I wish you, we're going to wrap this up now, but I wish you a lot of success in what you're doing. And I hope we meet again somewhere down the road, you know, because I think we're both kind of doing the same thing in the industry from a different kind of different perspective, maybe a little
Absolutely.
bit.
Absolutely. And everybody can catch me at superhumanradio.net. I do 4 shows a week. There's a lot of content there. And I mean, you could go back to 2006, 2005.
Yeah, I can verify that, you know. So anyway, listen, I do thank you a lot for coming on. It means a lot to me. And we'll see each other again.
Thanks, Leo.
Okay, Carl, take care.